James Bond.
Fabulous radio listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Sex Talk. I am your host, DJ, gayest homosexual in all of Pittsburgh. And tonight we have a very, very special show planned for you. We have with us...
Is he the guest who dares not speak his name?
I'm busy reading, I'm sorry.
The guest who dares not speak his name. And tonight we're going to talk about sex in the movies, that is, sex in cinema. Homosexual sex, heterosexual sex... And
computer-generated sex.
All kinds of sex. DJ, the host that dares not speak his name, is actually a local Pittsburgh celebrity and is well-known in the internet cinema circuit. I'll let him describe his activities or not as he chooses. Also in the host, also in the studio with me tonight is perspicacious co-host Lance and longtime friend and BDSM expert Luke. So welcome to all of you. So DJ hosts that dare not speak his name.
Maybe you need to come up with a shorter version of that, or
nameless host, masked host.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Just I think guest dare not is good enough.
Well, I want to accord you the proper respect. So DJ hosts that dare not speak his name. How did you? Why do people put sex in movies?
For the same reason people make movies, to make money and to build bigger houses and saunas and hot tubs.
But is the purpose of making movies really to make money? I mean, I'm thinking
that's a pretty mercenary outlook on life.
I mean, like, for example, the makers of the film Oleana, for example, like possibly last year's worst film, or maybe it was a couple years ago. I mean, they can't possibly have expected to make money.
David Mamet has the biggest pull I've ever seen.
Besides, wasn't that his wife who started it? So maybe that explains the agenda.
His wife, Lindsay Krause, is that
no,
his wife is Rebecca Pigeon. She's a singer and sometimes actress.
movie. Oleana sounds like an extended margarine commercial.
Maybe the first thing you want to do is distinguish films from movies.
Interesting. Well, DJ, host of Dare Not Speak His Name, maybe I would like to toss that question right back at you. What distinguishes a film, as you put it, from a movie?
Now, a film is some creative work that usually one or two people create to, with some message, the same way they write a novel or write a song. While a movie is this commercial enterprise designed to produce a good return on its investment to the producers.
Where does the flick fit into this?
Oh, gee. Well, these are just loose definitions. Okay. I'm sure there's probably some overlap, too.
So, going back to 1978, wouldn't you say that George Lucas and the original Star Wars changed he invented the whole dichotomy you're talking about. He invented really the very first movie event qua events, right? I mean, Star Wars 1 was, the first bona fide blockbuster in the history of American cinema. True or false?
False. What about Jaws?
Gone with the Wind.
Birth of a Nation.
Yeah, I would actually say the difference between a movie and a film goes all the way back to the old studio days. But if you want the more modern post antitrust stuff that sort of broke down the studios, yeah, Star Wars made, well, Star Wars was showed that a certain genre could be lucrative. And any sex that's in that movie, I might add, is very discreet, right?
Right, right. Well, so maybe Star Wars is a bad example because everybody actually thought it would fail when it came out. But certainly, we live in a period now where movies are carefully calculated, like Men in Black or Wild Wild West.
Right. Those are exactly movies. Right. Once it's calculated, once you're thinking about calculation, it's no longer an artistic work.
And I must reject, certainly that was not true of Birth of a Nation, as you point out, or Gone with the Wind, right? They didn't have, like, a rap soundtrack or a star.
Birth of a Nation with a rap soundtrack, that idea has some potential.
Yet another brilliant...
Gone with the Wind went through two or three directors, cast of thousands. It was certainly a very big production.
Well, I have no doubt that it was a big production, but...
Well, I think what DJ, the guest, homosexual and all of Pittsburgh, is trying to get at is that movies are more than just a movie these days. They're events. The movies are designed as much around marketing tie-ins and multiple streams of revenue, as they like to say, as they are about any sort of narrative impulse or desire.
Yes, and in that sense, Star Wars created that genre, absolutely. If that was your point, I agree wholeheartedly.
Was Star Wars the first movie with action figures?
Well, there's a story about Star Wars because Lucas asked for the merchandising rights, and at that time Fox didn't see any money in it, foolishly, and gave them away to Lucas for essentially a song, right? Which is a mistake that Fox vowed a year afterwards to never, ever make again. And so it might have been the first movie where those sort of revenues played a legitimate additional role in sort of the thinking of the filmmakers.
So, indeed, the version of the story I heard was that he negotiated during the final stages of production of the film, he was so strapped for cash that in order to retain creative control, he actually gave back some of his fee, like he gave back his director's fee and kept keeping the screenwriting fee or something, right?
He certainly...
And then said, give me the toy merchandising rights and the sequel rights.
Maybe, but anyways, now Fox would value those merchandising rights for Star Wars, right, as well over, like $500 million at least, right? And so...
But it depends. I mean, some toys, like the Oleana action figures, just sat on the shelf. There was just
yeah, but that was that. I think
they were in action figures.
But that was, I think, is because they chose Long John Silver for their fast food tie-in instead of a major player.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of skill has to be that's involved in these marketing schemes.
True. It was interesting when what was the movie The Prince of Egypt came out, right? It was a giant animated blockbuster, and there was a noticeable absence of...
That was intentional,
yes,
by the way.
It was intentional due to the sensitivity of the subject matter. But it was odd that it stood out that there were no media times, there were no Happy Meals.
They intentionally avoided the fast food connection. They decided that there was a serious subject, it was a story of liberation, it was a biblical story. They brought in all these consultants from the three major Western religions. They didn't want people dripping, hamburger grease.
They knew how easy it would be to step on somebody's toes over
the
this.
DJ that dares not speak his name needs to speak directly into the mic.
Although, I'd like to point out, speaking of serious subjects, that the name of the show is Sex Talk, and our discussion so far has been remarkably sex-free. So if you've had sex, or seen a movie, feel free to give us a call here at 621-9728 or here on the Carnegie Mellon campus at 8-9728.
You think that covers everybody?
I don't know. I was trying to figure out something earlier. There might be some blind amputees.
Or very young children.
Or very young children.
It's interesting that you should mention the Jar Jar Binks character. Did you? Because
I was thinking about him, certainly.
Because I was just back in the sex talk research center, and our team of interns actually had found numerous articles relating to Jar Jar Binks and his supposed sexual orientation. Did you, Lance? Do you have any information on this?
Why? Yes, I do.
Interesting.
Move over, Tinky Winky. There's a new gay superstar in town, and his name is Jar Jar Binks. This is from the New York Post. Sci-fi fans, movie critics, and gay writers across America say the flamboyant, computer-generated alien from Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, is definitely homosexual. His whooping outcry in moments of emotional distress reminds viewers of the outrageously feminine half of La Caja Fol, is that how you pronounce that? Couple, the Chicago Tribune said. And Jar Jar is definitely gay, proclaimed this week's Village Voice, which shows a limp-wristed Jar Jar carrying a handbag on the front page. And a new crop of websites dedicated to blasting Binks say his over-the-top whining and lisping have ruined the Star Wars franchise. He stays a little too close to Obi-Wan and company, and who else but the gay male community would wear that sleeveless leather vest, the website JarJarSucks.com says. But Bronx-born actor Ahmed Best, who plays Jar Jar with the help of computer-generated special effects, insists his character is straight as an arrow. Jar Jar is definitely not gay. He's not homosexual. He's not homo anything, Best told the Post yesterday.
That's not even homo sapiens.
Well, it's definitely not. That's the worst part.
As Best signed autographs at Coconuts Music and Movies on 6th Avenue. But if people feel pride in thinking that he is the first gay character in Star Wars, then that's fine. Dan Wilson of the Lesbian and Gay Community Services Center in the West Village said his group had no information one way or another whether Jar Jar is gay. But I can assure you that if he is attacked and bashed the way Tinky Winky was by Jerry Falwell, we will certainly embrace him in our community. We'll just have to wait until Episode 2 comes out. Maybe Jar Jar will get together with C-3PO. In a statement, George Lucas and his Lucasfilm company said, Star Wars is a fantasy movie set in a galaxy far, far away. In a statement, to dissect it as if it had direct reference to the world that we know today is absurd.
Somehow I can see C-3PO in drag much more easily than I can imagine Jar Jar Binks.
I have a copy of Mad in the 70s, which reviews a lot of old Mad parodies. And even in the original parody of Star Wars, C-3PO is depicted as a complete flaming homosexual.
All right, could I be the first one to make a comment? He's not human. He's a gongon. Who knows how they reproduce?
True, but Star Wars movies are more in the tradition of fantasy movies than they are science fiction movies. And alien races usually play the role of reflecting some aspect of humanity. And in that sense, I think that thinking about Jar Jar's sexuality is perfectly warranted.
And I could not agree more. I think George Lucas's statement is a total cop out there. I mean, obviously, it's a cop-out. I was just saying, well, you know, this movie was based somewhere else, therefore, no notion of morality should apply to it. I mean, imagine if he had racist elements, which he does, of course, and or other outrageous, sexist elements, for example. People would be up in arms.
True. If you had a Gungan in a sleeveless T-shirt beating his wife repeatedly, one might be drawn to some conclusions.
Did we even see any female Gungans in the movie?
Are you hinting that they're all gay?
No, I'm hypothesizing that our human notions of gender might not apply.
Perhaps, but feeble humans that we are, we strain to understand the unknowable in terms related.
But it seems they've gone the wrong way. Shouldn't they ask why are there only men on the Jedi Council? That's probably a much more fruitful direction to think. Since those are at least human looking, a lot of them were at least human looking.
True. Were they all men? I wasn't sure about some of the background.
Was there a woman on the Jedi Council?
Can't remember. All the prominent ones that I can think of, the heroes, of course, Yoda, the
Samuel L. Jackson character.
Yes.
The guy with the enormously elongated head.
Yes. The I don't know about the
there's some kind of wizened wizard guy too, right? Or am I thinking back to my own fantasies?
Yes, it's kind of a Pink Yoda type.
So is the entire Jedi Council gay? Is that the conclusion that we're just drawn to here?
I think it's like we're on some sort of gay witch hunt. Imposing our brand of homosexual McCarthyism upon George Lucas's innocent narrative intent.
Well, I've already seen slash porn about Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan.
Well, that should be pretty obvious. I mean, they've spent a lot of time together.
Yes.
There is that advisor-advisee relationship, however, that makes it seem somehow immoral. Even if they were, you know, they put the prospect of a gay relationship aside.
The advisor-advisee version of incest, you're saying?
Well, no, I can't remember Liam Neeson's character's name, would be taking advantage of young Obi-Wan.
Sure, anytime there's a power differential in a sexual relationship, it leads to complications.
I actually have to say, the other thing that I was struck by in the article that you just read was it's a very disturbing notion from some gay group. It was, I believe they said something like, you know, as soon as they start bashing him, we don't know if he's gay, but if he starts being attacked by Jerry Falwell as much as Tinky Winky was, then we will accept him with open arms. Like, why is their acceptance conditional on being abused or taken advantage of?
I think you're misreading the statement. The statement says that if he is attacked and bashed, we will certainly embrace him in our community.
I believe DJ,
the gayest homosexual in all of Pittsburgh's point was, why doesn't the gay community embrace him now without waiting for this preemptive strike of fascist hostility from Falwell and his minions? Is that what you're trying to get at?
Exactly. I mean, what is this? The so-called inclusive group is hardly inclusive at all. They're obviously just furthering their own political agenda. They don't include people that...
Maybe they're going to choose one of normalcy.
They don't even include Jerry Falwell.
Well, I'm saying they appear to only include people that can further their own political ends. So where's the morality?
Maybe they're saying, let Jar Jar do what he wants. He doesn't need our help unless outside forces intervene.
Well, I don't know. I think I think you're putting human. I mean, this is a character that lives in a universe far, far away and a long time ago. He's not homo anything.
Why the above face? Where is this coming from?
I don't know. This whole episode is just confused. I said, maybe can we?
Are you still thinking about that guy from Boyzone?
Well, it's interesting that you should mention that guy from Boyzone, because there's been even though Boyzone has been I've been a fan of the group for years and listened to all their music. They've recently come under fire, and they've been in the news.
For our audience, who probably are not active listeners to Boyzone, we should point out that they are what, sort of Ireland's equivalent of NSYNC, probably, or the New Kids on the Block.
Yes, exactly. They are. I don't know if they're from. Are they in fact from Ireland? That makes them all the more exotic.
I don't know. They do have a sort of Celtic mystery about them.
From what I understand, one of the roguish members of Boyzone, Stephen Gately. I can't find my article. Okay, I will read this article. Here we go. Boyzone singer Stephen Gately issued a statement Tuesday announcing that he is gay and is in a relationship with Eloy De Jong. sounds like a Bajoran, you know, from Babylon 5 or something. Mm-hmm. A singer for the Dutch band Caught in the Act.
So not only the crossing the barriers of nationality and the love that dare not speak its name of homosexuality, but also the crossing from one band to another.
Probably across record labels, even.
Yeah, there's certainly something unseemly about that.
Gately reportedly had learned that a former associate, it's interesting that you say associate, a former associate was peddling the fact to different tabloids and decided to take matters into his own hands. I wanted my hands to hear the facts from me and Eloy, Counselor Eloy of the High Council, before anyone else got the chance to publish a twisted version of the truth. I don't understand that. How could the truth be more twisted? Gately tells the Sun, I hope the fans who have supported us from day one will respect my honesty. I mean, the honesty here is not at stake. What's at stake is the fact that he's violating God's laws.
By dating across record companies?
What happens in the throes of passion? He starts singing lyrics from as yet unpublished songs. Aren't there intellectual property problems?
DJ caught in the boy zone. Oh, I'm sorry, DJ Gayest Homosexual in all of Pittsburgh. Your attitude towards this story surprises me.
Well, it's actually arousing me a number of different feelings. Stephen Gately is actually a major babe. I don't know if we actually have a. Oh, we do have a URL. You can go to their website. It's something like.
Is it just boyzone.com?
Yeah, well, it's boyzone.co.uk.
Oh, okay.
In the UK, that's their, like, that's co.uk is what they call .com in, like, over there in Europe.
No, well, that's just Iran, UK United Kingdom, right?
Is that what UK stands for?
Yes.
I thought it was, like...
No, it's since United Kingdom. They must not be Irish, because Irish would be IE, actually.
Interesting. So.
Well, they might be Irish with a British record company.
True, however. That's true.
You know, it is all one big, happy... customs union,
yeah, true.
So I was just visiting the website today and actually checking out all the members, and I'm actually really pleased that he was the member of Boyzone that turned gay, because he's the cutest. Like, there's a bunch of, like, you know, when you have a boy band, you have to have, like, a boy from each, sort of broadly speaking, from each kind of domain of attractiveness. Like, you have to have, like, the kind of skanky, greasy guy with the goatee. You do, and he's like...
What domain of attractiveness is that?
That's like the bad boy, right? He's like, you know, he's got, like, the word snake tattooed on his arm or whatever, right? And then you have to have, like, the totally innocent, like, white bread, white boy with, like, blonde hair and just, like, you know... He's like the total...
I'm mapping these to Spice Girls. I
non-threatening one. And then you have to have the kind of buff boy, sort of the sort of pouty gym guy who's maybe a little bit vulnerable and yet, like, really, really muscly at the same time. He's misunderstood, right?
Aren't they all misunderstood, though?
I guess they are. And then you've got Stephen Gately, who's just like...
Is he the leading man? Is he the quarterback of,
like,
the band?
He's like roguishly handsome.
Yeah. So of this, what Spice Girl does he compare to then?
Well, I'm not really hip. Maybe I'll defer that question to our co-expert.
Well, I'm not sure how to do the pouty but muscly one to an appropriate Spice Girl, but certainly the bad boy equivalent would be sporty.
Sporty? I was thinking for the muscle.
Scary, you think?
Oh. I actually know very little of the Spice Girls.
For the gym boy, I was thinking Ginger Spice, but actually, she's not very pouty, but...
Maybe.
Please take that apple out of your mouth.
Yeah, are there any FCC regulations related to eating a Granny Smith apple while on the air?
Well, no one would have been the wiser if you didn't. So I went to the dentist the other day. Actually, this was like a year ago. And this dentist, I won't give his name because I'm about to say really mean things about him, but he was like the most annoying dentist I've ever been to.
I hope this ends in sex.
It might have. I mean, this was a dentist. I think this guy was willing to do anything to keep me as a customer, and so it was just the most, I don't know, it's just really annoying. So I first of all, I go there and he makes me fill up this, like, 100-question questionnaire about my teeth. So it's like, you know, how do you feel about your teeth? Do you take care of your teeth? Do you want to keep your teeth your whole life? And I'm like, why are you asking these questions? Can I just, like, you know, get my root canal or whatever? And then so I come in there, and, like, he's reading over my questionnaire. At about question 50 or so, I started checking things off randomly, or I started checking up the thing that I know would, like, upset him. So, like, when he asked, do I want to keep my teeth my whole life, I said, no, I do not want to keep my teeth. And so anyway, the...
I'm still waiting for the tour of the reality.
So he's doing his, like, finally, like, I'm there, like, for over an hour, and finally he, like, does something related to the practice of dentistry, which is, like, look in my mouth and, like, look for cavities or whatever. And he's, like, open wide, and he's like, wow, you can open your mouth wider than anyone I've ever seen.
So I recently started with a new dentist, and I had to fill out a long questionnaire. We'll have to compare notes later.
So DJ, open your mouth. I want to see how wide it goes.
I can't. It's ordinary.
Wow, ladies and gentlemen, he fit an apple the size of a small baby's head into his mouth.
I mean, I think, so, you know, it's funny because as soon as he said that, I was like, a whole host of sort of sexual responses came into my head. You're like, you know, well, that comes in handy in my line of work or whatever. But I suppressed all of them because he was so annoying.
And you didn't feel the need to entertain him with your saber wit.
But then somebody else went there, and he told him that he opened it in another way. And then an even more disturbing conclusion came to me is that this guy tells everyone that they have the whitest, like, jaw, you know, distension they've ever seen. And the disturbing conclusion that one must inevitably conclude is, look, why does this guy think that's a compliment? He's telling that to everyone to put you at ease or to, like, it's sick. It's a sickness. So
how did you get the title of the gayest homosexual in Pittsburgh?
Well, there's a contest, actually, held every year.
Isn't it Mr. Gayest Homosexual of all Pittsburgh?
That's right. There's
an accompanying Ms. Gayest Homosexual.
The lesbians have a different competition, which involves, you know, power tools and being angry. So, by the way, if you want to call in, the phone numbers are 412-621-9728.
I don't think we've quite tapped out the vein of sex and cinema yet. In fact, I think we've...
We should return to that.
...barely scratched the surface. So, speaking of Jar Jar, he's completely computer animated, and he was completely convincing as a character, which leads to the obvious thought about...
A lame character that you could barely understand.
True, he's completely convincing as a bad character, but the illusion of him not being sort of a real entity... the illusion of him being a real enemy was never broken.
Well, there was a scene. There was an entire battle between the Jar Jar's race and the androids on a field of green, and it was completely
true.
Although
I was more impressed actually by the sort of like close in shot one-on-one, 1-to-2 interaction between Jar Jar and the other Jedi Knights. Like that I think is harder to do to get the good human facial expressions right. But the inevitable point this leads to is, so when is this technology going to be used for sex? Maybe with Jar Jar, probably not, right?
You mean in a movie? Or
well,
you mean having a sex, or do you mean a real person having sex with a hologram in the privacy of
No, I meant in a movie. DJ, the gayest homosexual in Pittsburgh, is often fantasized about entities with thousands of small sea anemone-like peni.
I don't remember saying the word small.
Sorry. giant tentacular peni. And I think we're almost to the point where we have the tools to realize his vision.
As a Latin scholar, I would like to point out the proper plural of penis is penes.
Penes?
With two eyes?
P-E-N-E-S.
Oh, okay.
Well, in Latin, but in common English, is that ever actually used in common English usage?
I would say penises in common English usage.
Ah, okay. Oh, I will rephrase. Thousands of tentacular penis-like appendages. And as I said, to reiterate, I think that humanity has the technology to put DJ the Gayest Homosexual in all of Pittsburgh's vision into practice.
But would there be a commercial interest? I mean, that's ultimately what would do this, right?
Certainly I, for one, would be interested in the advanced science fiction pornography.
I mean, pornography is a huge industry as it is. Right now it's limited by the physical laws that pull women and men's bodies down to earth relentlessly.
Well, I mean, the lesson I learned from what was that movie about the porn industry in the 70s?
Oleana.
Boogie Nights.
Yes, I think it was.
Oleana was like the 60s. Actually, a little earlier.
Didn't it say that video sort of killed the higher level porn? That it sort of went for the cheap.
I heard that assertion myself.
True, but it's made a comeback, actually. Like, porn on film made it, like, in the 90s, in the sort of mid-90s, enjoyed a sort of a revival where it was marked off as a quality product and was...
Well, because, I mean, because special effects are getting cheaper and cheaper every day, mm-hmm. but they're not that cheap that you can...
True, but it's only a matter of time, don't you think? Or do you think there'll be some floor under which the cost of such depravity cannot...
No, I'm not going to make such a prediction, but certainly the Hollywood standard will bar will keep rising.
Well, this goes along with a comment that I simply must make, which is that the best porn movie that you will ever see is still nowhere near like the sort of half-terrible Hollywood film. I mean, like, when will Hollywood's top talents, like, when will Scorsese, you know, America's most gifted filmmaker, make a pornographic movie? Or, you know, pick your favorite director. It doesn't matter.
The guy who did the Ernest movies?
Who was the guy that did that awful Pret-a-Porter, or Altman?
Yeah, Robert,
you know, when he's having an off year, can't he make like a porn
he's
movie?
He's had every year, but since Nashville has been enough.
Well, that's a debate for a different radio talk show.
And so,
perhaps he does under another name.
Well, I don't.
He's a little old too. Like maybe with Viagra now he'd start to care again. But
well, I don't think that there anybody is secretly making these films because then we would see them, right? I mean, the best, you know, like the best gay porn movie I've seen, which I think was titled "A Long Penis's Journey into Ass." You know, very literary film, had a lot of cultural content, but still, you know, just did not measure up into Babe Pig in the City. It wasn't half as good as that, and so
I quite agree. All of the porn films I have seen have had acting that can be at best described as wooden.
True.
Wait a minute. Well, weren't most of the characters in Babe Pig in the City naked? I mean, yeah, maybe I'm confusing nudity with true pornography.
True, but you forget DJ, the gayest homosexual in Pittsburgh, believes in the word of God and doesn't swing that way.
That's right. The animal domain and my own sexual acts shall never meet.
Let's think about this, though, because let's think about why people go to see Jackie Chan movies. Do they go to see Jackie Chan movies for the acting? No, they go to see Jackie Chan plant his foot on the bridge of somebody's nose in death-defying ways over and over again, making it much like pornography. If there was acting, right, you would feel a little bit uncomfortable, I think, in between all the ass-kicking, right?
I'm not so sure, because isn't there some, like, extra great, I don't know if it's Jackie Chan or John Woo, but didn't, like, when those guys team up with a great director, or they make some, I mean, when you combine the incredibly hot, you know, martial arts action with a powerful story and an ageless plot.
Do you think there's a synergy at work there?
Yeah.
Much in like Wu's classic work, such as The Killer or Hard Boiled.
Yes, thank you. Exactly. I think you can you transcend the genre and you create something truly timeless.
Perhaps. Again, if one believes in a free market system, as we should, as good Americans, the explanation must lie in a failure of demand for pornography with quality plot elements.
No, because even believing in capitalism, it can be sufficiently cheaper to make cheap porn than to make quality porn. This is why Budweiser is the most popular beer.
Because it's cheap.
Yes.
Oh, true. Well, but there's beer that's even cheaper than Budweiser that's not as popular, right? I mean, they're like the market gets what it deserves, then, essentially, is what you're saying.
But I'm not sure even an high-quality, you know, Oscar-quality pornographic movie would be made these days by the big studios, because it doesn't, you couldn't market it the same way you do. You certainly couldn't do the Happy Meals and the other crap, right?
Even the NC-17 art films, like Henry and June and whatnot, have not fared that well, I believe.
Well, let's take a look at those movies. Like, for example, Crash by David Cronenberg is perhaps the most recent example of a movie that attempts to say something real about the human condition while entertaining its audience with ample hot action.
And Ted Turner, certainly a capitalist, kept it on the shelf and refused to release it in this country for 11 months.
True, although, again, this may point out a weakness in the studio system in that the reason why he did that was fear of backlash spilling into other areas of his business. So no matter how much Crash would have made, the peripheral damage would not have justified it necessarily, right?
I think I have to reject this claim of yours that we live in this sort of perfect capitalistic system, or that, you know, if something's not happening right now, it must be because, you know, it's not profitable or because some capitalist force is opposing it, right?
Remember, this is a sex talk show. All your arguments must be framed in terms of sex.
Well, okay, think of it this way, then. Think of the economy being a vagina, okay? and innovation, new ideas, arrive in the form of a large erect penis penetrating the vagina. Now, you might ask, why are these people who own the various genitals not having sex all the time?
I don't know. I mean, America's economy takes multiple innovations simultaneously all the time, right?
Right, but the fact that innovation happens at a certain rate.
Some innovations and a certain vaginismus of the soul.
Well, the fact that innovation happens at a finite rate is already proof that the comments that I'm making may well be just an innovation waiting to happen. I mean, today's seemingly bad idea, or as you put it, you know, capitalistically inefficient proposal is tomorrow's, you know, hot internet startup. For example, you know, everyone thought AOL was a terrible idea. Everyone thought Amazon.com was a terrible idea.
No, everybody thought AOL was a terrible idea because it was, until a different technology enabled it to actually do something, enabled it to have potential. And Amazon.com, I don't think anybody thought Amazon.com was a bad idea.
Does Amazon.com sell porn?
No, I have this in the logs. First of all, Amazon, I remember people were talking about, this is a different discussion, of course. But when Amazon started, it was this money-losing startup.
It's still a money-losing startup.
True. Okay, for the sake of argument, I will grant you that Amazon, people thought Amazon.com was a bad idea.
What was the enabling technology for AOL?
The internet.
The internet was around since 1972.
Sorry, the internet in combination with a critical mass of users, which allowed for the commercialization of the internet. But I believe we're getting off topic here, but for the purposes of argument, I will grant you that our capitalist system breaks down all the time and fails to deliver the high-quality pornography that humanity as a species has truly earned.
I want to go back to the market forces that would prevent a high-powered movie studio from marketing porn. I mean, look at all the problems that Austin Powers-related stuff, which is just very crude British-type Naughty Bits humor has been having in the marketplace, both here and abroad.
Tell us more, please.
Austin Powers has been having problems? Or are you being
Well, yeah, there were a couple of stories I saw this week while surfing. Like today, there's some woman who was very upset because in a Toys R Us store, apparently there were two versions of the Austin Powers doll. There was an R version and a PG-13 version. And somehow the R version made it onto the shelves of Toys R Us. And a distraught mother was confronted with her son asking for what 10-year-old son who came up to her in the store and asked what horny meant because he sat on the Austin Powers doll box.
How does one differentiate the R-rated Austin Powers doll from the PG-13?
I guess the PG-13 one says lines from the movie that don't use naughty words, other than shag, which is apparently viewed as tame in the West, but is, you know, risque elsewhere.
I have not seen the movie, but I do not believe it would be too much of a spoiler to mention both lines that didn't contain naughty words.
Well, I think the line that actually set up the complaint was, "Do I make you horny?" Which anyone will remember from the first movie. And the second one, which is hardly more tame, I think, that was the version of the doll I thought were in the store was "Fancy of Shag." Which actually is more sexually explicit.
If you know what shag means.
True. But I think by now, given the media leviathan that is the Austin Powers sequel media tie-in, everyone and his grandmother knows what shag means.
So I must ask, is the Austin Powers doll anatomically correct?
Yes, it does have his very hairy chest. In that sense, it's an accurate representation.
The Austin Powers doll portrays him wearing only glasses, socks, and bushy chest hair. Wait, no, that would imply that he's not wearing any pants.
That would indeed imply that he's not wearing pants.
I wonder. Well, maybe a field trip is in order.
Well, behind the opening credits of Austin Powers 2, that is indeed what he is wearing. What you just described.
Yes.
You know, speaking of, it's interesting that we made a brief foray into economics, because I find a very interesting sort of classical economic capitalist thing is happening to me right now, and that is that my Gaydar beeper is vibrating, and so that means that one of you in the room also has a Gaydar beeper. So I don't know which one of you it is.
I don't know what you're talking about. What is this Gaydar beeper that's mentioned?
My Palm Pilot triggering good.
You haven't heard of the Gaydar beeper? Well,
I've heard of Gaydar. And its straight cousin, Ladar.
Right. Well, modern technology no longer, as a result of modern technology, you no longer have to rely on your intuition.
Well, I can only imagine the complex neuroscience that went into analyzing the human with the best gaydar on the land and took that and put that into some sort of easily consumable product.
So gaydar, for our listeners that don't know, is the innate ability of every homosexual to detect other homosexuals in his immediate vicinity.
Let me ask you a question. What's your hit rate on your gaydar? Like, how accurate is your gaydar?
I'm actually, it's indistinguishable from noise, basically.
Saying you might as well just roll a die whenever you meet somebody.
Yes, really, because I was going to say I'm always wrong, but. You could use that to predict, right? You just have to invert that signal. But no, usually people that I think hate me turn out to be gay, and then
and just hate you.
And then people that I think are like too attractive to be gay turn out gay. I mean, everybody turns out to be
Everybody turns out to be what?
Well, I was gonna say everyone turns out to be gay, but that's unfortunately not true either. So I have no gaydar. In fact, you know. People have asked me as a representative of homosexual Pittsburgh, like whether gaydar exists, which I find a question to be sort of intellectually at the same level whether angels exist or whether ghosts exist. Like, not only, I mean.
I would take you to that. The question they're really asking is, are gays much more perceptive in spotting other gays than naive hets? I'm sorry. I've made you cry. Well, let me ask you this then.
The gay dar beeper to which DJ, the gayest homosexual in Pittsburgh, is referring is, I believe, the transmitter system that can be carried and used as a mechanism for the homosexuals to.
With broken biological gay dars, like.
Yes.
So
like Mr. Gay is
telling. Let me understand what's going on here. You buy one of these gaydar emitters, you walk into a room and you broadcast a come and get it signal that other men with gaydars, who are presumably gay because otherwise they wouldn't buy one of the gaydars, picks up and
it's just like those immortals in the Highlander TV show, right? When another immortal walks into a room, the immortal that's standing there gets this little buzz in their head and suddenly can say, "Ooh, there's an immortal in the room, I better figure out where I hid my sword." It's very similar. It's sort of very similar.
I knew there was some gay subtext in that show, but I didn't realize it was so blatant.
I believe that it's a development of similar technology from Japan called the Love Getty for...
Called the what?
Love Getty, I believe. Okay. Love, G-E-T-Y. For the shy Japanese men to... and presumably women also, but it seemed to be mostly marketed at men for some reasons I don't really fathom, to try to find love without actually having to meet anyone before they found love. So certainly I have hoped for an implementation that I could use on my Palm Pilot to turn my Palm 3 into an infrared beacon of love in my pants.
Although that depends on people receptive to receive your infrared beacon.
So, I mean, is there only one bit of information in this product?
It only just says one beeping, gay.
Yeah, basically. Or does it have more detailed information?
Well, I think indeed the deluxe version of the product actually transmits your sexual preference in the same way that the crude hanky system in the 70s mm-hmm. transmitted your preference.
So instead of just saying gay, you might say like, I'm ready for your golden shower right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. Like, I'm a 3 on the boyzone scale, meaning that you go for the goatee guy with the snake tattoo.
So according to this article, the device was based on a vibrating doorbell signal, which kind of argues just a single bit of information that's similar to a doorbell. It also mentions that development is in progress on a wider radius gaydar to be marketed to gay-friendly bars or clubs.
How do you know who's sending the signal, right? So you've got your own gaydar in your pocket. Some, like, a phalanx of 3 young Marines walks in and your gator starts pinging off. Like, how do you know which one to approach that won't get the crap kicked out of you?
This is not adequately addressed. And
it must be supplemented with real human gaydar, then.
Or eye contact and flirtation
because that marine, that very silent marine, right? His gaydar device is vibrating too.
So he
knows that there's someone in the room who's looking for him.
The other risk, of course, is that this technology might not be used only for good,
but also for evil.
Yes. Menacing foes could falsely masquerade as gay using this technology.
Well, I was hoping there would be some sort of evil genius that could send out a beam that would control all those with gaydar, creating an army of zombie, undead, homosexual warriors as a first step to world and even planet-like solar system-wide domination.
See, you make an excellent point, of course, but... the one thing that strikes me about this device that seems wrong is it's actually interfacing with the wrong part of the body. I mean, it's all too cerebral. You don't want to intellectually know that the other person is gay. You want to feel it down
there. You want something wrapped around your penis that perks up and says hello.
The receiver should be attached to a vibrator.
Yes, exactly.
Well, this echoes our debate of last week, which, for those of you who weren't listening, talked about the evolution of sex toys into a futuristic dystopia. But partway there, we discussed there's a device already that women can slip into their panties that can be remote controlled that sort of vibrates in the right way. And I think it's a small extension to take that concept, let it spend the night together with the gaydar concept.
Right, so I think what you'd want is you'd want the devices to independently compute whether you're compatible with this person, and if you are, they should both be stimulating both of you subtly at first and then more intensely.
But that would require the most advanced cutting-edge AI technology known to man.
Not at all. I think the Furby people could be brought into this.
So, and you know this feeling that some people have, they just, when you're around some certain people, you feel a charge, if you will, you feel a certain... thrill of a certain that
why let that stay metaphorical?
Yes, combine this with the Folsom Electric toys.
True. Well, I was wondering, DJ Gayest Man, Gayest Homosexual in Pittsburgh, speaking as a representative of the homosexual community, at our visit to the bathhouse, there seemed to be an awful lot of anonymous consequence-free sex happening. Do you think that that sort of idea might be extended into sort of anonymous remote stimulation through these devices?
I'm not sure I see where you're going, but so you're imagining wearing this device while you're in the bathhouse?
No, just wearing this device at a party, thus giving anyone else with an equivalent device a blank check to manipulate you sexually.
Right, so I don't think you should have the control. See, the mistake that the device that DJ Luke referred to is that you're letting the vibration be controlled by another person. You need the vibration to be controlled by a neutral, artificially intelligent third party, which, when it decides that the two of you are a proper mate, then it stimulates the both of you.
Why not just fall in love with that, if it can stimulate you?
Well,
if it knows what's compatible with you, then it ought to know how to do you right.
Well, maybe indeed that polyamorous couples of the future will have both human and artificial elements, you know. Which I think would actually be
the gay C-3PO is starting to make more sense.
True.
So, if it's a protocol droid, experience in all forms of human interaction.
Well, 2 million languages. Surely he must know the language of love.
There are
many spoofs of hardware of Star Wars, notably Hardware Wars. Perhaps the original. Has there been anything done in this vein, in sort of a more sexual vein? Because the characters in the original Star Wars are notably desexual, but prime for resexualization, I think.
I'm sure there has been a porn knockoff of Star Wars. I haven't seen one myself, but...
See, this is just another your example of your faith in capitalism again. I mean...
it's not, because Hardware Wars was not done out of a capitalist motive. This is an example of my faith in humanity's drive to tell a good story, to say something vital about the human condition.
And what story did you get out of of that nature? Did you actually get out of Harbor Wars? I've seen it, by the way, numerous times and enjoyed it. But
okay, well, true. With Hardware Wars, it was more a desire to make people laugh, which is a far more nobler motive in my mind.
Did the Children's Television Workshop people give permission for Cookie to appear? I always wondered that.
I don't remember. Try though I might to sound like a disheartened capitalist, my sympathies lie with those who would create regardless of profit motive.
Well, it seems like, you know, if you sleep with the goose, you have to sleep with the gander. I mean, the thing is, you can't be relying on this, you know, Adam Smith's invisible hand to like be supplying all these economic forces on one hand, and then say, well, in some cases they just don't exist.
No, but there I can't. I rely on Adam Smith's invisible hand to deliver to me movies like Wild Wild West
or Oleana.
No, and then I rely on man's desire to tell a good story to deliver me with movies like Blue Velvet. I think you can have your butter and your margarine, too. And your Oleana.
Which is which in that metaphor?
I don't know.
So Stephen Gately is like my Pamela Anderson. I want you to understand this. This is like the most attractive boy band member I've ever seen.
What will be his equivalent of Pamela Anderson getting her implants taken out?
Well, I guess that might mean him shaving or having a, or actually in a gay man it would have to be buttock implants. That's actually all the rage.
Do those things exist, buttock implants?
Oh yeah.
Could you explain to our tender audience how exactly they work?
Well, I mean it's pretty much the same concept. I think you know a skilled surgeon makes an incision in the lower buttock, and slips a silicone pad in there. it has to be actually a stronger one.
Is it silicone or sometimes saline as well?
I think the modern technology is saline, but the bag has to be a lot.
Presumably not. Presumably deep inside and not on the surface.
Well,
that is a load bearing structure, right?
Right. So that's my point. It has to be a very strong bag so that it doesn't pop. But that, you know, they've got calf implants. They have pectoral implants. Medical science has really gone a long way.
Lip implants.
Propelled by, indeed, the...
So are you saying the ass is the last frontier, or the ass is the vanishing frontier of this?
I think what I'm saying is that, you know, for some people, using the abdominizer and using the buttmaster is not the answer. So there are some of us for whom the firm 23-year-old college bubble butt is just an unattainable goal, and we have to turn to technology to provide the kind of beauty that we seek.
So you're already projecting for this boyzone guy a career where he puffs up and then deflates as he attempts to gain more legitimacy as some sort of an artist?
Well, I think that, you know, indeed, in concerts in the future, when Boyzone goes a little bit more avant-garde, they might actually have concerts where he's selectively inflating and deflating each buttock to the beat of the music for the benefit of his audience. I wouldn't find that surprising at all. I mean, they'd have to get out of their current oeuvre, which is the whole teenage girl thing, and they'd have to have a different target audience.
What would that target audience be, do you think?
Well, you know, the same sort of group that goes to who's that one that smears feces all over herself?
Karen Finley.
That's right. It's the more artsy kind of crowd that's into art that's on the edge. So on that note, I would like to share that this is WRCT Pittsburgh. Thank you all for listening. We are out of time. It's been a fascinating and very tender, precious time being with you, the listener. Please tune in again next week, Tuesdays 11. We will always be here for you. Good night.
Good night.